and gentlemen, let's go. Let's go. We ain't got no time to waste. Let's go. Let's go. You are now listening to Jason Anderson, and you are in the
The Zone is presented by Guaranteed Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to GuaranteedFoods.com.
All right, on a Monday edition of The Zone right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you. Sterling Holmes, Jack Johnson, Dylan Michaels. Heading up until 2 o'clock the next 4 hours. We've got you a lot of stuff to get into and talk about today. Chiefs wrap up their draft of 2024. 7 selections in all. We'll get into those picks. We'll get into the different picks we like. Love. And a breakdown and sort of look at the different things that took place in the NFL draft. We'll talk about that as the show progresses. We will also get into what's next for the Chiefs. Donovan Smith certainly is out there. We'll talk about that subject and if that is something the Chiefs want to do now as they draft Kingsley Suamataia, and they already have Wanya Morris from the draft last year. Do they want to bring in somebody else and really get that competition? Give Wanya Morris maybe a little less pressure on him to feel like he needs to start right away this year. Not necessarily right away, but needs to be in line in a position to start. And also Kingsley, that would be starting right away to have maybe a more established guy who, as the season goes on, there would be nothing wrong with replacing that guy. It's not like you're not replacing Juwan Taylor, who has a couple of more years on a contract. It would be a one-year deal. So we'll talk about that. The undrafted free agents that the Chiefs have gone and signed as well since the draft has concluded. We'll talk some Royals today. Josh Kaiser, One Royal Way podcast, will be our guest coming up at noon. We'll talk about the Royals here in the next couple of hours as well. They lose 2-3 to Detroit. 0-4 in the rubber match games. 2 against the Orioles, 1 against the Mets, and then yesterday's game against the Tigers. But really, the game that has most people annoyed, frustrated, the one that got away was Saturday's game, and we'll talk about that. Jonathan Bolin on the mound tonight, filling in for an IL'd Alec Marsh, so we'll talk about a number of those things as well. 913-912-4810 is the text line, 913-912-4810. We'll hear from Mike Borgonzi. We'll hear from Clark Hunt, who was part of the press conference over the weekend with the draft, and a good portion. In fact, I would say 80-85% of that conversation was about the stadium deal, was about the no vote, and what happens moving forward. And a lot of interesting information and commentary from Clark Hunt on that. Also, a couple of things with Mike Borgonzi that kind of let us know their thought process in the first round with Xavier Worthy, and then in the second round with Kingsley Suamataia, as, you know, the Chiefs always release those. And a lot of teams do, the conversations that they have with the players that they're drafting of, hey, we're going to, Brett Veach is always the same thing. All right, well, we're going to go ahead and turn in the card here and make you the newest member of the Kansas City Chiefs. You excited? You pumped? All that? Well, we're going to hand it over to the head coach, Andy Reid. Hey, you healthy? You feeling good? Oh, we're pumped to have you, man. We're pumped to have you. All right, we're going to get over to your whatever position coach for Kingsley. Here's Andy Heck, whatever. But what's really interesting is the phone call with Kingsley. Brett Veach said, you know, Coach Reid, about 10 picks was really sweating it. Last 10 picks until we got you was really sweating every single pick. So a little bit in the mindset of where the Chiefs were at 64 and how much did they want to give up to move up and get him. And you're sitting there going, please, please, please let him fall. Okay, don't take it. Okay, they didn't take a tackle. Okay, I can't imagine what Andy Reid was going through in those final 10 picks, because it's obvious how much Andy Reid wanted this guy. Now that we hear Brett Veach tell him for the last 10, because once it got close enough to where you're going, okay, it's within range now. It's not like Kingsley went 35th. I'm like, all right, well, I don't have, now we can immediately move on. But you get 10 picks away, you're like, okay, well, now you start to look at teams that may have already drafted a tackle, don't need a tackle, and like, you know, really, there's only like 3 teams that may take him. Do we move up here? How high do we have to get to move up and get him? Is somebody going to jump us because they know we love Kingsley Suamataia? So you got to be watching for teams that want a tackle, but also watching for teams behind you that know you want Kingsley Suamataia and that connection. You had him in a top 30 visit. You know the connection with Andy Reid. You know the Chiefs need a tackle. It's somebody people talked about in the first round for the Chiefs. Is a team going to jump ahead of you? We all have experienced that with fantasy football or fantasy baseball, different drafts like that. This is more real life where you're talking about, you know, going out and playing actual football and getting a player you feel like could be a left tackle for a long time for the Chiefs if he develops into that. So we'll hear Mike Borgonzi talk about a couple of things there, and then we'll also hear from Kingsley Suamataia, who I think will be a fun character for the Chiefs until maybe the PR staff, you know, limits his excitement of talking to the media and tells him what not to say and be a little less colorful and just straight to the point and get the hell out of there. Hopefully that's not the case, because he was fun to hear to talk and hear the media, the questions and everything, and his answers, especially the story about the Big Bear, Chris Jones, who kills offensive linemen for a living. And also Chris Jones, kind of rude, asking the person that was taking Kingsley around on his visit, saying, "Who'd we cut now?" Like, he thought I was already on the team. And Chris Jones, "Who are we cutting now?" Like, damn, Chris. You just
straight
got,
to the point.
You got $100 million and you're taking a... They're like, no, this guy's on a top 30 visit. Oh, cool. Who are we cutting? Damn, Chris. He really was eating offensive linemen, killing offensive linemen. That's what he does. He's killing careers and dreams, too. So we'll talk about that. All right, 913-912-4810. Let's go around the room and talk about our general reaction and our... we can give draft grades if we want to. Draft grades are fun. I hate draft grades. Ooh, the Chiefs got an A. I love draft grades. Chiefs got an F. Oh, they're stupid. They're dumb. You never know what's going to happen with these prospects, and who knows what the value is. Ooh, fourth round, the best value in the draft. Well, let's listen to this guy talk about the Chiefs. This Jay Nimbitt, the best value? Oh, okay, well, now let's listen to the instant reaction, right? That's always the case. You know, anytime that five-star prospect commits to your team, it's a five-star prospect, decommits. Well, you know, he's a four-star by ESPN.com. I mean, it's like, really? I mean, yeah, look, there is a publication that has him as a five-star, but he's really a four-star sort of consensus. Because last week you called him a five-star. Well, that's different. Why are you bringing up old stuff?
It's like PFF. If it fits the narrative, it's a great stat.
It's a great one. Yeah.
It's a great stat. If it doesn't, PFF's wrong. Come on now.
They don't know how to grade Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes has the highest PFF grade since 2018. Well, there's degrees where they don't know how to grade Patrick Mahomes. I mean, there's just there's a few things that you're like, he should be better here or there on certain things. But, overall, it's terrible. He is the highest graded quarterback since 2018. Yeah, I'm saying it's awesome. Like, they really know what the hell they're doing, so...
Well, it's interesting because I think there is always consensus. Again, I don't think it means everything, because it always seems like the Eagles, every single post-draft, it's like, the best, the Eagles. How does Howie Roseman keep getting away with this? And then it's like,
two A's. They got two A's just for drafting and trading. This is amazing.
Last year, it was just blown away. I will say, though, the Chiefs got this 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, with Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, that draft. Everyone's like, now that was a phenomenal draft. Last year, the Lions somewhat got shelled because they drafted positions of, of not need, but not the positions where elite positions, cornerback, edge rushers, it was safety, linebacker. Everyone goes, what are you doing drafting these guys? Well, look at the Lions last year. All those guys hit and played well. So sometimes we look at these draft grades, and as you're mentioning, we look what fits our narrative, and if it does not fit our narrative, it's just atrocious. You got to let these guys play out, but I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited as well. Jack, what was your general reaction to the seven players that the Chiefs get? You did Friday night. You were on the air on Friday night, so you were around for the Chiefs and wondering if they're going to trade up. And
was a long night.
It is a long night. Yeah, we were joking with Seren and Curtis when we were getting off the air on Friday, and I'm like, man, you guys are doing yeoman's work. And Curtis was like, Friday's the real difficult one. Friday night's the difficult one. But you were there, and then hanging around of like, do they trade in back into the third round or whatever? But so you were there on Friday night, and the excitement excitement and everything happening with Kingsley Suamataia, but then on Saturday getting another five selections. So what's your general takeaway of these seven picks for the Chiefs?
Yeah, I was shocked that Kingsley Suamataia was going to go to Kansas City in that spot. I mean, once they made the trade up, I'm like, kind of like with Xavier Worthy, how we all thought, well, it's going to be a wide receiver. There wasn't really a thought of what other position group it could be. I think when the Chiefs made that trade and Suamataia was still available, it was like, you can cash this in at this point. But I was floored that he was still out there. He was still available because we talked about him last week being a first-round grade. And even people were saying that's a first-round grade. But that's how the draft falls sometimes. I mean, A.D. Mitchell fell to what? The mid part of the second round?
53, 54 to the Colts. Crazy.
I mean, really plummeted. I mean, we all thought that Buffalo might take A.D. Mitchell right there. They went Keon Coleman, who's, you know, an athletic freak, but a little bit more of a project.
Also knows how to buy coats.
There you go.
He's very smart.
A fantastic interview. So yes. Jealous people in Buffalo to get to interview him. But it's hard not to be pleased with what they did. It kind of felt like with day one and day two, they got their positions of need. And then after that, they got a lot of good depth. I mean, Jaden Hicks, I thought, was an excellent pick at that spot. They got four tight ends now, but how can you not be excited about Wiley? I mean, the overall size, he's fast for being 6'6", what, 250, 260? He ran a 4.6 at the combine. Like, they got a lot of guys that fit their exact mold of a player. I thought Jaden Hicks, the reason I like him so much, that's a Steve Spagnuolo type of player. Like, and we all know by the success they had in day three of drafting cornerbacks, drafting safeties, it wouldn't shock me if he's a guy that really leverages himself onto the starting unit at some point in the season. Maybe not, but at least get close to it. It's just, I really have a hard time finding one player in this draft that I went, that didn't make too much sense at all. And if it was, it might have been like Hanson all the way, like final picks of day three. It's like, okay, it may work out. But again, we're talking about sixth and seventh round picks at that point. The first four, I really have no complaints. I thought they really got the guys they needed and really fits their overall scheme.
Yeah, I was surprised with the first four of the players that they ended up getting because I thought it was going to be a choice in an either or. In fact, we created the scenario last week of, all right, if Brett Veach says these tackles that the pocket sort of like if he said if this is a deep class for tackles and if you've got, you know, top 10 or 15 picks, then it's awesome. Then you're going to get a great tackle. But the tackles sort of go till 35 or 40. And after that, there's a drop off. Well, we know he said the wide receivers go till about 50, that you know, high end and then that middle pocket. And then after that, yeah, there's another group of players. So we were talking about, all right, so do you take a higher end wide receiver, but knowing that at 64, Brett Veach has already said after 40, there's a pretty deep drop off in the tackle market. So you're not going to get a guy like Kingsley Suamataia. It's sort of an either or. Or do you take Kingsley Suamataia, Tyler Guyton, somebody like that that we had discussed, and then you take the second group, as Brett Veach talked about, after the top 50, another group of wide receivers there. It's an either or. Do you take a higher level tackle but get a lesser level wide receiver, or a higher level wide receiver and get a lesser level tackle? And that's why I came away just floored on Friday night, in that every pick that went by, it's like, okay, he's still there. All right, well, Kingsley is still there. Kingsley is still there. And then at 64, when they traded up to 63, you know, obviously they were worried about teams trading in front of them, which is sort of what we were talking about there, is that they have to worry about teams picking him in front of them. They also have to worry about teams behind them that know they want Kingsley Suamataia, so they're going to trade up in front of him. And as soon as they traded up, I'm like, holy bleep. The Kingsley's who I selected on the exercise we did on Wednesday when we were going through the different draft trade scenarios.
At 32.
Yeah. The guys that we chose Kingsley, you chose Tyler Guyton, but it was offensive tackle in the first round. And then they trade for Xavier Worthy, and we're talking about, like, on Friday, would they have to trade up, use that third rounder from next year because they didn't have the third rounder this year because of moving up for Xavier Worthy, but they had two fourth rounders, so maybe you throw a fourth rounder in there to move up to, maybe you got to move up to 50, maybe you got to move up to 54, something like that, move up 10 spots to get a Kingsley Suamataia. Is it worth doing that, or do you still need the more dart throws, right, to be able to, more lottery tickets, to be able to find some of those players? And we know they didn't really have to. They may not have needed to trade up with the 49ers in round number two, but it was obvious the antsiness was like, all right, enough. He's close enough. We can make a deal. The value is there. We don't need 15 picks. We needed 15 picks a couple of years ago when we were rebuilding the team and rebuilding the defense and traded Tyreek Hill. We've got a pretty good roster right here. We need players that can be close to a higher level, can fill in some spots. We don't need the depth that, you know, 15 picks here. Let's move some things around. Let's go and get a guy who should, by all accounts, should not be there, and even by the Chiefs' own account, didn't think would be there.
Some of my pushback and concern when the Chiefs traded up to get Xavier Worthy was because I sit here and go, okay, well, now you're not getting Kingsley. You're not getting a first-round tackle. Well, I'm an idiot because they got both. They got both.
Well, that's why we talked about that exact question of higher-level wide receiver, lower-level tackle. Higher-level tackle, lower-level wide receiver. Not thinking they would be able to end up with a couple of guys that were viewed as first-round grade and high second-round grade.
And I hate just sitting here and going, yeah, just trust Veach no matter what, but he knows more than me because he got both, in my opinion, the elite wide receiver and the, again, I don't want to say elite tackle because I think the elite tackle is Alton and Latham, but a very, very good tackle. Again, a guy that we both thought was going at 32, he got both and was able to do that. That to me is very impressive. Going back to Jack, you know, you get Jaden Hicks. You get a safety who was projected in the second or third round who's very versatile, can do a little bit of everything. Jared Wiley, we'll see how that plays out, fourth tight end. It is what it is.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Okay.
But I loved fifth round pick Hunter Norzad, the center, who played right tackle, who played left guard, who played center. This is your Wiley. This is your Nick Allegretti.
It's Allegretti. They needed somebody that can snap the ball and play guard. This guy fills that role. And now you're not completely reliant on Caliendo being Allegretti. You may have another guy in a fifth rounder that could slide into that role too.
And this is what you do. You draft a guy in the fifth round on a rookie contract instead of giving those guys, as you're seeing, what the money Nick Allegretti got the year prior, what Andrew Wiley got. You draft these guys. They become too expensive when they become good. I like that pick. And then even Hayden, cornerback from Tennessee, I'm just sitting here going, oh, he's all pro now. Sorry. Sixth round. He's 6'2", sixth round from Tennessee with injury concerns. Sorry. I'm sorry, Dave Merritt's going to make you an all-pro. I don't make the rules.
Well, that's sort of the point, is that, you know, we knew this. We joked about it, but it turned out to be reality. In the fourth round, they're going to take a defensive back. That's what they do. Fourth-round picks are defensive backs. Forever. It's what Brett Veach does. Next year, the Chiefs' fourth-round pick, if people do not mock a defensive back to the Chiefs in the fourth round, they are doing it wrong every single year, Jack.
Exactly. I mean, this seems to be the recipe every single time. And day one, day two, you're probably looking at an offensive lineman. You're looking at a wide receiver. When you get to day three, that's when they're going to find their defensive backs. And this is what good teams do, as you brought up. They're not necessarily drafting for a starter in day three. And I think some teams lose perspective in that. The ones that are rebuilding, they're going, well, in day three, we have to draft our starting wide receiver, draft our starting running back, our starting tight end. Whereas the Chiefs, the reason you see so much talent get pumped out over and over again is because they may draft a guy who's not ready day one or day two, but they can be ready, maybe not year two. They could be ready like week six or week seven. And that's what I look with a guy like Jaden Hicks, right? I think Jaden Hicks can be a guy that slowly works his way into the everyday rotation, kind of in the same way Brian Cook did. Now, Brian Cook's going to be a starter, and he is a starter alongside Justin Reed, but the best teams out there look one step ahead always. And that's what I think I saw with all the day three picks. You know, Jared Wiley is not a immediate right now pick. It's a guy that is an athletic freak that you hope that maybe in week 10. I mean, tight ends get banged up all the time, right? Blake Bell got banged up. I believe Noah Gray at one point got banged up. Irv Smith's been banged up before. So just because you have four tight ends, you know, it doesn't mean that he's never going to get on the field. Maybe he does, but it's a part of drafting those guys and thinking he is the type of player that can easily slide into this spot. It's not trying to fit a square into, or a peg into a square hole. Is that the saying?
Square peg, round hole.
There you go. Not like that where you're thinking, oh, he's mocked to everybody as being maybe a starter early on. It's more of a depth piece, and you don't need to be overly excited about it. Maybe not all of these guys hit, but in past events, in recent history, it kind of feels like those day three guys are going to have some impact either this year or next year in a bigger role.
Well, we know the Chiefs like to play their 12 personnel. They like to play two tight end sets. And when Jody Fortson went down, your third tight end became Blake Bell. So if you were playing a two tight end set and Travis Kelce wasn't there, he missed a game, or was banged up, or was tired, Blake Bell's on the field. So I think that's one of those things to where a few years ago, the Chiefs made a clear statement. They were tired of their defense being slow and not being able to tackle. Those are a couple of rough things to be able to have a defense be slow and not be able to tackle. And they went and got speed and guys that attacked the football and came down and hit and tackled. And that's what we saw. That's what we saw with this team, whether it be Shamari or Brian Cook and Trent McDuffie and Joshua Williams and Jalen Watson and Leo Chanel, George Karloftis. They were tired of the slow old guys that then couldn't necessarily make the tackle. They brought in guys that were going to hit, that were wanting to be a secondary players, that wanted to be a part of the run game. That's what they were attacking. And I think if you're Andy Reid, Brett Veach, Matt Nagy, offensive coordinator, whatever, that you don't want to go into a season where you look at it and go, one tight end goes down and now Blake Bell is going to be out there running routes. So now if one tight end goes down, you're looking at either Kelce, Gray, Irv Smith. Kelce, Gray, Wiley. Kelce, Irv Smith, Wiley. Gray, Smith,
don't
Wiley.
Do this one. Don't well, do that one.
Say, if he's tired.
Yeah.
Your two tight ends are choosing two of the three of Gray, Wiley, or Irv Smith. It's not Blake Bell out there wasting routes. Anytime Blake Bell would run a route, it was a waste. Sorry. You've got guys that actually can go out there and receive the football and be somewhat of a threat. And I think that's part of the, all right, that's not happening anymore. We put a lot of eggs in the Jody Fortson basket, and he could not stay healthy. We are going to attack it multiple ways. We don't need just bring in Blake Bell as a blocker because then he turns into a guy that has to run routes. We're going to bring in guys that are tight ends that can also block. Jared Wiley is viewed as a pretty good blocker. Irv Smith viewed as a pretty good blocker. But they can also go and run routes and catch the football. And, you know, one of the advanced analytics sort of route tree and athleticism, all that. Jared Wiley coming out of college, one of the five players he was compared to, one of them was Travis Kelce. And obviously that's tall cotton to be able to, you know, be compared to that. But you get to learn from them. You get to learn the different nuances that are there. And I'm okay with them looking at somebody that, you know, a couple of years down the road. And like Jack said, they like to draft for down the road. This is last year for Justin Reed in the Chiefs uniform. So you lose Justin Reed, but now you still have three safeties, Brian Cook, Shamari Connor, and Jaden Hicks. And none of them will be first-year players. You'll have Brian Cook as a third year, Shamari Connor. Well, that'd be Brian Cook as a fourth year.
Yeah.
Shamari Connor when it's a third year, and Jaden Hicks is a second year.
Time flies when you win Super Bowls, huh?
That's exactly right, yeah. And we're talking about next year. But this is the last year for Justin Reed. You know, so now you've taken a safety position that's paying a lot of money to Justin Reed, and you flipped that in 2 years of having three guys that are all on rookie contracts.
Going back to Jared Wiley really quickly here, he had eight touchdowns last year. That's kind of your point here. I think that's a little unique situation here as well, as they've been trying to find some red zone threats here. Typically has not been wide receiver. They're not going to get that big bodied X. They have time and time again said they're not going to do it. So what did they do? Well, they had Jody Fortson, who perpetually got injured. I think they tried using him in the red zone, but when you couldn't stay healthy, you can't use him. This guy is a threat in the red zone with eight touchdowns for TCU last year. Now, one of them was an 81-yarder, so that's not in the red zone, but still point remains.
Yeah. I don't think I'm going to downgrade him.
You're not going to downgrade for having an 81-yarder. Having eight touchdowns is a huge step in the right direction for Kansas City, for a guy who is 6'6". This does give me some question about Irv Smith. I don't know if he can be placed on the practice squad or not, because his guaranteed contract is only $384,000. I don't think the Chiefs carry four tight ends. Maybe they do, and I'm wrong here. But it's not like Irv Smith you have to keep. $384 million guaranteed.
$84,000.
$384,000.
If it's $384 million guaranteed, you have to keep him.
On me. You have to, I
also,
believe.
What a terrible contract.
The Broncos would somehow still release him.
What a terrible contract.
$384,000 guaranteed. So my point is, his spot's not
guaranteed.
Not guaranteed.
It's not as guaranteed as $384 million, but it is not. You're right. And if they keep four tight ends, then they're going to keep, you know, five wide receivers. You know, we were talking about them keeping seven wide receivers. Well, there have been years where they've only kept five wide receivers. if they're keeping five wide receivers, that's terrible news for Tony and Sky Moore, you know, because you're looking at Rashee Rice and Hollywood and, you know, obviously Xavier Worthy, and then you're choosing between the other folks. You know, for, and Justin Watson is part of the other folks,
yeah.
You know, and if they bring in anybody else, we'll see. But, you know, one of those guys, if they're only keeping five wide receivers there, if they want to keep those four tight ends, but that'll be a choice that they have. At least it's a good choice. It's not to where we're kind of talking ourselves into, man, how do you cut one of these wide receivers? You got seven wide receivers that are all, you know, that can all play. Well, I mean, sort of foolish, you know, looking back now, because they didn't have seven wide receivers that could play. We know that. They were looking for one. You know, it's one of those things where it's like if you've got two quarterbacks, you don't have one. If you've got seven receivers, you don't have two.
I heard people clamoring for Byron Pringle to come back last year. That's when you know you're in a bad situation.
I mean, they brought back Mecole Hardman. That's when you knew you were in a bad situation. And so, you know, now that you have some real choices at the top, you don't feel like you need to go deeper in your wide receiver group because you're hoping somebody establishes themselves.
I mean, in this scenario of getting four tight ends on the field, that'd probably mean that Irv Smith and Jared Wiley, right, are they going to be the guys that shine in camp? And even then, that probably has to mean that one of those bottom guys and Sky Moore, Kadarius Toney, Justin Watson don't make it. But like you said, good problem to have.
Yep. All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back. I do want to hear from Mike Borgonzi. He talked about the Kingsley Suamataia pick, and he talked about in the first round how the board sort of fell. And I thought it was interesting. So, two different rounds, he gave away a little bit what the thought process was and how aggressive they were wanting to be for these players. We'll talk about that coming up next here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, a Monday edition. It's The Zone. All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, talking about the Chiefs draft, the seven selections that they got. Let's hear from Mike Borgonzi, because I thought there were a couple of interesting things here with Borgonzi. Let's play clip number 12 here. And this is a quicker clip, and I think it was Todd Lebo that asked him about, you know, as the second round was going on, did you get the feel and the sense that you would get a chance to draft Kingsley Suamataia?
Yeah, so we probably started around 52, 53, 54. You know, we were on the phone trying to get up to get him. He was the guy that we targeted, and I think Baltimore took a tackle there at 62, and then we just felt like, you know, let's just make a small move and get him.
53, 54 is where they were looking to move up to get Kingsley Suamataia. Luckily, a team did not agree to that deal with the Chiefs to move up because whatever the price tag was, they didn't feel like it was good enough because they were able to take Kingsley at pick number 63. The Miami Dolphins took Patrick Paul, offensive tackle, from Houston. The Houston Texans took Notre Dame's Blake Fisher. And then the Ravens took Washington's Roger Rosengarten. Rosenbagger, Henry Rowengardner. Those were all names that we talked about that the Chiefs could get in the second round if they passed on Kingsley.
Yeah.
It was like, do they get a Patrick Paul? Do you get a Roger Rosengarten? Guys that have played right tackle. I mean, Blake Fisher, Notre Dame, only a right tackle because, you know, that Joe Alt fellow was playing on the left side. Because when you're getting down there, I mean, Patrick Paul played left tackle, but it's like a project, right? Was viewed as more of a project than Kingsley. And then he's there at 63. Like, that makes sense as to why they were wanting to move up at 52, 53, because you had three other tackles that ended up getting drafted before they got Kingsley Suamataia.
What makes me laugh, it's almost like those teams forgot he was on the board. Like, they just assumed that Kingsley was off. You know, when you're doing, like, a draft, like, oh, well, he's of course gone, so I'm not taking that guy. And they're like, oh, no, he actually is still available?
Yeah.
The other teams just completely forgot that Kingsley was still there.
It's like one of those fantasy drafts where you lean over to the guy next to you. "Hey, man, is this guy still available?" Mm-hmm. It's the 10th round. No, a judge is not available. Sorry. I was wondering, just didn't make sense that Spencer Strider was still there in round 11. But
I didn't think so. I didn't think so.
I didn't think so. Did Caesar live here? Yeah, I didn't think so. I didn't think he actually lived here. Yeah. Is the Chiefs leaning over to a team that are already drafted, let's say, like the Cardinals? Yeah. I've got this. Is Kingsley still available? He hasn't been picked, right? I'm going up and down. Is Suamataia still there? That's interesting. But it shows how aggressive they wanted to be. That's how bad they wanted Kingsley Suamataia. They clearly wanted Xavier Worthy pretty badly because they moved up to 28. But how high were they willing to go? Well, let's hear Mike Borgonzi weighing in about how the board fell after taking Kingsley in the second round and what the first round looked like and how everything sort of shook out.
I know having six quarterbacks go within the top 12 picks was, you know, I don't know if 1984, I think that might have been the last time. We knew it was quarterbacks, it was receivers, it was tackles, and there was going to be a run on these guys. And all the, you know, the tackles went off the board probably at 20, 21 that we kind of, you know, we're kind of focused in on. And with Worthy, you know, we were just waiting for him, and we tried to trade up earlier for him in the 20s, and we ended up getting him a little bit later.
Again, another player they were trying to trade up further to get Xavier Worthy. Now, I do wonder where at in the 20s, like, were they trying to trade up ahead of, you know, where the Jags took Brian Thomas? Like, was Worthy their fourth best wide receiver on the board? Because if they're trying to trade up and Brian Thomas and Xavier Worthy are both there, but they're trying to trade up for Xavier Worthy, did they view him as the fourth best wide receiver on the board and they would have been trading up to 21 or 22 to get Xavier Worthy? Now, maybe they're talking about after the Jags took Brian Thomas, okay, well, now there's another wide receiver gone, and this is our best wide receiver on the board, so let's call the Detroit Lions. And they said, sorry, dude, Terrion Arnold's there. We're not passing up on this. We have such a needed cornerback, and we can't believe this guy slid all the way to 24. It's not going to be worth it for us to pass up on this guy. Thanks, but no thanks. And then Arizona's sitting there, Green Bay's sitting there, and they're going, yeah, we need a tackle. We're not going to let you trade up and get a tackle. Who are you? Because I don't know how common the practice is that if you're trading up with somebody, you have to tell them who they're trading up for. Typically, from what I understand, that doesn't happen. That you don't tell them the person you're trading up to get. And so it's just sort of a trust thing. So you got to sort of read what that person, because if I tell you who I'm trading up to get and you say no, and then you draft that guy, like, well, screw you, you know?
And you can't go to the media because then it just looks like you got played.
Yeah, that's right. Green Bay's there. So then maybe they looked at Tampa and was like, well, Tampa, they're not going to take a wide receiver. They just gave a whole lot of money to Mike Evans and they've got Godwin. So maybe we don't have to worry about wide receiver there. And then Arizona just took Marvin Harrison. Don't have to worry about wide receiver there. Okay, the next spot to move up would be the Bills. Well, let's give it a shot. We know they want wide receiver, but let's talk to them. Let's see what they want. Let's see. Okay, well, we worked it out. Maybe it was a little bit of a higher interest rate to trade with the Bills. But let's do it to get up to 28, because at that point, you're like, all right, here's some wide receivers that may be going somewhat soon. So it's just interesting that, you know, we know that Brett Veach is uber aggressive. We know that he wants to trade up and he can't help himself but to trade up. And he said that before, that he can't help himself. Like, one of the questions at the pre-draft press conference was, can you see yourself sort of moving up into mid, you know, first round? Well, I can always see myself doing that. It's just a matter of having the owner sign off on it and being okay that we do that. I can always see myself doing that. But I would love to know at what point in the 20s were they looking at Xavier Worthy? Was it before Brian Thomas or after Brian Thomas? Because, again, that's high praise if they viewed Xavier Worthy as better than Brian Thomas, as a better fit for them and a wide receiver that they viewed as number four on their board and not clearly number five on their board.
I think it's also interesting that he mentioned Fatanu. Well, mentioned 20 or 21. Fatani was 20.
Yeah.
So that was the final offensive tackle on their board.
And Brett Veach had mentioned tackles when they went there. Then we knew that it was sort of done with trying to move up and get a tackle.
But I think it's a good point of where do they view Worthy in comparison to Brian Thomas Jr.? Again, if they did try to trade up to 22, 23, we'd have a better understanding.
Mm-hmm.
We'll never know because you're not going to go and say, yeah, we wanted Brian Thomas, but we got Worthy.
Yeah.
But again, when you look at how this draft fell, they got lucky. I don't want to say lucky twice, but it fell for them twice that teams did not trade with them, and they were able to make minor trades and still get their guy.
Yeah, but Kingsley, they were looking at 52, 53 to move up and get him, and they get him at 63, making a minor move to move up one spot.
How much does that save? I mean, seriously, how much draft capital does that save?
It's a really good point. I mean, a decent amount. I mean, you're talking about moving up 10 spots as opposed – well, that would be 12 spots from 64 to 52, moving up 12 spots as opposed to one, or moving up to, you know, I guess – after Brian Thomas, let's assume that they had Brian Thomas at number four. And it's like, oh, no, Brian Thomas is our top four. But we're not going to trade up to get Brian Thomas because we love the value of Xavier Worthy if he, you know, falls. Tackles, if they start to fall, then we're willing to trade up for that particular tackle. So let's say Brian Thomas goes off the board at 23. We know that. But after Brian Thomas goes off the board, let's say they view Xavier Worthy as the fifth best. At 24, I can't say the Lions trading out. Terrion Arnold was there. Sorry. That's just it's not going to be worth it to us. You're going to have to overpay so much that it won't be worth it to you for you to trade up to get this pick because we know Arnold won't be there at, you know, 32. So we're not going to do that. So then Green Bay, start talking with Green Bay, start talking with Tampa, start talking with Arizona, and maybe they all said thanks but no thanks. That, you know, it wasn't worth it for them to slide back because somebody was there that they wanted, Jordan Morgan or Graham Barton or Darius Robinson for Mizzou to go to Arizona. But, yeah, that would cost you a decent amount more. Probably you're not just swapping – you're not just moving back, you know, 38 spots or whatever to, you know, in that draft. You're giving up a draft pick. You're giving up maybe next year's third. Maybe you're just simply giving up your third. So you're not sliding back in the fourth. You're just simply giving up a third to move up at that point. So you've got one less player. That might be Jaden Hicks.
Well, that was my point was, did the fact that they did not get the ability to trade higher with the team, did that save them Jaden Hicks? Did that save them Jared Wiley?
One of those guys. Because you can make a pretty strong case that one of those guys would not be on the Chiefs if they had to trade up to 25 or 26 instead of 28. That it's going to cost a lot more than just flipping picks. Or maybe they give up a third, maybe they get a fifth or sixth back, right? Not necessarily a fourth if you're moving up a couple of more spots. But again, you've got Wiley and you've got Hicks that are a part of this draft class, and especially Hicks that's viewed as like Dane Brugler and I think Matt Miller and Mel Kite, like the second best safety on the board. Daniel Jeremiah. Well, this guy was my second best safety. There was talk about whether or not he would be the first safety taken in the draft, and they got him here in the fourth round. Amazing value. Can't believe he slid this far to the fourth round. Like, so many people were like, how in the hell is Hicks still there? Oh, now he's going to the Chiefs. Of course. And now he's going to be playing and getting coached by Dave Merritt. So, you know, good luck. Here we go. This is a guy that should have been gone in the second round, and he was there in the fourth. And that's part of the strategy and the process of going through the exercise of do you trade up or trade back? Do you trade? How far do you trade up? Because this is a real life scenario that if you moved up to get Worthy at 25, you don't have one of the two of Wiley or Hicks.
And then
instead, it didn't work out. Sorry, Sterling.
My fault.
No, you're good. It is. It didn't work out, and they still got Worthy. And they still got those two guys.
Well, and then you go to the second round with Kingsley. They were trying to move up 12 spots. Now, again, it's the second round, not the first.
But still.
Is that a fifth rounder? I don't have the value in front
I'm
of me.
I'm going to try to find the chart real quick. I got it somewhere.
Is that Norzad? Is that your backup offensive lineman? Is that your Allegretti that you just lost? Again, these are all things. When we look at this draft, and again, we don't know how they're going to play out in 2024 and beyond, but all we can look at is the process right now. Well, the process played out pretty damn well for Kansas City. If you're upset about what the Chiefs did, you have no reason to be. Like, again, I don't think they hit every single thing right. We can look back. We know Breland Speaks was a miss, and McCole Hardman. We know probably not every single one of these dudes are going to be a hit. But when you look at the process right here, it's hard to be disappointed when they got their guys at their positions of need. And the times they did try to trade up, teams basically said no thanks, and they still got their dude.
So to move up to 25, according to the draft chart, you're 50 points away. Their third rounder is worth 40 points, and their first fifth rounder was worth 10. So there you go. You're giving up a third and a fifth to move up to 25. I mean, that's the difference in value of 25 to 28. I mean, those first-round draft picks are so valuable that once you get into the second and third and fourth and fifth, the numbers start to get pretty indiscernible, right? I mean, you're talking about 2 or 3 points on a trade value chart. This one is 50 points. For Buffalo, it was only... There's 16. It was only 25 points. It's double the points to move up in the point value chart. It's double the points to move up 25 than it was to 28. You don't have Hicks or Wiley. You don't have one of those guys. You're picking just simply in the fourth round at pick 131. Who was 131? That was Jaden Hicks, right? So let's say, you know.
No. Wiley was first.
Yeah, so Wiley was the first pick. So Jaden Hicks was the Chiefs pick at 131. Wiley was the Buffalo Bills pick. So then let's just say you won't have Wiley. So we know for a fact you would not have the tight end from TCU if you moved up. We're just assuming that I shouldn't say for a fact, but we're assuming that, okay, with their pick at 131, they viewed Wiley more valuable, though, than Hicks. Yeah. So then you wouldn't have Hicks, right? I mean, because they drafted Wiley first with the Bills pick. So, yeah, it doesn't make it obvious that they would have. It just happened to be that Hicks was their pick. But it's the exercise of when you trade up, you're losing players. And it's easy to say you're losing players when those spots are not filled out with a name. A little bit different when the name is filled out. And it's like you've got a safety that should have been gone in the second round. You got him in the fourth round. And a lot of people's second best safety on the board. And you got a replacement for Justin Reed now. At least a couple of guys you can choose between with Connor or Hicks to replace Justin Reed, and you're saving money there. And you still got Worthy. It's also a little bit about being patient, you know, not getting, too overly excited. When they drafted Willie Gay, I believe Brett Veach talked about it, that he had to be talked out of trading up like 15 spots to get Willie Gay in the second round. He kept saying, like, you know, everybody's like, you know, because they didn't have the picks or whatever it was. Like, they didn't have the, and he was like wanting to just like, let's go get him. And everybody's like, just chill. If he's not there, he's not there. But we can't give up all these picks to go up and get him. We can't give other picks to go up and get him. We can't. And then he was there and he's like, oh, okay. I'm like, see, you're good. But if he had his way, he would have traded up to go get Willie Gay. Happened to be there. If he had his way more, maybe Andy Reid had his way, or another team agreed to it, they would have traded up even more to get Kingsley. If they had their way originally, they would have traded up higher to get Xavier Worthy. So it is a lesson in sort of patience that honing in on one guy doesn't mean that guy wasn't going to be there. It also is, you know, from those that say you shouldn't have traded up, sort of an element of maybe he would have been there at 32, you know, because they didn't think he was going to be there at 28, and he was. So they certainly didn't think he was going to be there at 32. He may not have been. I don't know. He might have been gone at 28 or 29. Who knows? We need to take a quick timeout. We'll come back. More Zone next.